70% of boys are raised pretty much predominantly by women only. Yeah. They have a single mother and they go to school and all their teachers are female. So we wonder why we're so lost as men in the modern age. Masculinity is not toxic. The absence of it is clearly.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I'd like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. And on today's episode, we have got on the founder of Elite Sentinel Coaching, and this is George Hayworth. Welcome to the show.
Zuby, thank you so much for having me. Excited.
Awesome. George, I've done a super brief intro there, but please let people know who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so first and foremost, I'm a husband. I'm a father. I served in the U.S. Army for 4.5 years on active duty. I continue to serve now in the National Guard. And like you mentioned, I'm the founder of Elite Sentinel Coaching, where we forge leaders and build legacies.
Amazing. Okay, so there's a lot there. Let me learn a little bit more about your background. Where are you from?
Yeah, so initially actually born in Europe, in Vienna, Austria. Moved to Oregon when I was about 3. Typical 90s kid lifestyle in America, Northwest. And, nothing really crazy in my life that way, but grew up, decided I wanted to serve in the military. Obviously, we're recording on September 12th. 9/11 was a huge, factor for me. I was 13 when that happened, so that really drove me to want to be in the military. Did ROTC in college, and I don't know how far you want me to go with this right now, but ultimately
ROTC. That's
Reserve Officer Training Corps. It's actually where most officers come from in the U.S. military. Is they go to college, they do their training program. It's definitely not as intense as I thought it was going to be. I probably should have enlisted in hindsight and just get right to it. But, it's the route I went, and, I wouldn't change really anything about that. So it was a great experience, but, so military background, that was, my early life was pretty defined by my service in the Army, deploying to Afghanistan. Kind of lived this fairy tale life for a while, and it all kind of came crashing down, and I'm sure we'll get into that, but that's at a very high level my background. I'm not sure how deep you want to go into my childhood.
I'd like to go into it. I mean, how old were you when you got into the military?
Technically I got my scholarship when I was like 18, mm-hmm. But I didn't get to active duty until I was like 22.
Okay.
So it's, 4 years of training and everything. So I deployed when I was 23. To Afghanistan.
Okay. And what was that like?
It was, for me, a very good experience. And I know that that might shock a lot of people. I deployed on a team that was not your typical structure for a lieutenant, right? So as a second lieutenant, typically, you're either in some staff role or you're like a platoon leader. And I was put on this specialized team to advise Afghan police. And because of the structure of the team, like everyone had to be kind of good at everything. So there wasn't really as much focus on like, oh, well, you're an officer and you do officer things and soldiers do soldier things. It kind of blended together. Mm-hmm. And as a very young man looking to prove myself, that was an incredible experience because I got to learn from guys who had deployed. This is back in 2012, had deployed already like 4 times. So they had just immense amounts of knowledge and expertise that I was just soaking in like a sponge. Mm-hmm. And that really defined a lot of my own personal journey because what I glossed over was my parents split up when I was a teenager.
Okay.
And I really felt a lot of insecurity as a young man. And I was really trying to like, had a chip on my shoulder, trying to prove myself. And so this was the first point in my life where I really felt like a man, like I was at war with strong, tough dudes mm-hmm. and I earned my keep among them, and I wasn't like the best by any sense, but like I definitely earned my place among the team. So for me, it was a very beneficial experience because I needed a lot of growth, and it gave that to me. I know now that where we are today, obviously a lot has unfolded since 2012. But, I look back on that time with a lot of fond memories, and I took a ton of lessons out of it. So, it's a difficult topic because people want to get political about everything. But there is a very powerful thing that the military does for young men where if you go at it with the right kind of frame, it is a very valuable experience. And so for me, it definitely provided that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Bitbox. As I'm sure you've noticed by now, inflation is a major issue. The more money that central banks print, the less your dollars, pounds, and euros are worth. When it comes to government-issued fiat currency, inflation is inevitable. That's why for many years I've been saving in Bitcoin. It's scarcer than gold, and it cannot be inflated by any central bank. But if you're going to buy and hold Bitcoin, it's vital that you store it securely, because leaving your coins on exchanges is risky and leaves them vulnerable to potential hacks. That's where today's sponsor, Bitbox, comes in. Bitbox is a Swiss-made hardware wallet that allows you to store your Bitcoin easily and safely. It only takes a few minutes to set up a wallet and take full custody of your coins the same way I do. Secure your Bitcoin today with a Bitbox. Go to bitbox.swiss/Zuby to get 5% off a hardware wallet today. That's bitbox.swiss/Zuby for 5% off. How long were you stationed in Afghanistan for?
So it was a 9-month deployment. We were kind of the first generation of the Army was doing like 12-plus month deployments, and they pared them back down to 9 months. So I was one of the first cycles through that was only 9 months long. Mm-hmm. You know, I have tons of friends who deployed much more than me, a lot longer too. So, yeah, just 9-month deployment. Nothing too intense either. Like, I don't want, you know, I try to be very clear about, like, I'm not some special forces ranger type guy. You know, I just typical Army. Saw a little bit of combat, yeah. Firefights and things like that, but nothing that you're going to write a story about, right? For me, the value of it wasn't necessarily of being a soldier. It was these kind of intangible lessons I learned about life and about being a man that I don't think I would have learned if it wasn't for that experience. So I'm very grateful for the people who trained me, taught me, mentored me, you know, and I got to operate at a pretty high level. We had a lot at our disposal, which as a young man in the military, that's a pretty cool thing, so.
What were some of the most important lessons you learned from that you don't think you would have learned otherwise?
I think the one that just became immensely clear, and I kind of knew it, but I didn't really live it yet, was everything is earned, nothing is given. Mm. And that, you know, when you're the new guy, right, you're the FNG, you know, everyone makes jokes about second lieutenants and stuff. There's a lot of memes out there, and because they've earned that reputation most
What's
times.
What's FNG?
Effing new guy.
Oh, okay.
So that is a very real thing in the military. And I knew I just needed to shut up and work hard and learn, you know, because most everyone on my team had deployed at least once. Okay. So I was like one of four people who hadn't deployed. And, you know, that is a lot of lessons to learn very rapidly. And that respect piece and that, you know, earning it piece is huge. And I think, you know, we live in this world of entitlement and trying to label everyone based off of their beliefs or skin color or religious affiliation. And all that gets stripped away when you're deployed. It's very real of like, can you do your job? Can you be a member we can trust? And if yes, then we love you regardless of who you are. And so that was kind of like my first real taste of life stripped of all the nonsense that we typically live in. Mm-hmm. And I think too, this is why a lot of veterans struggle, is they have that and then they come back to normal life and it's all the social media and all the politics and everything again, and it's like, man, I just want to go back.
Yeah,
you know. So for me, it was a very, that was probably the number one lesson, was like everything is earned, nothing is given. And then another one was being prepared, right? Having what you need potentially, having it and not needing it is better than needing it and not having it. And if you look back at a lot of like military blunders or things that went wrong, generally someone forgot to do something. And so that became very real, living that on a daily basis of like, hey, always have 3 days supply, always have all this coordinated for, you know, have all your gear ready. So that was just kind of a way of life. And I've definitely carried that forward to all aspects of my life of like, nope, prepare a lot, think about, you know, contingency plans and things like that. And, you know, especially as a husband and father, you need to think ahead for your family. And so it's not just combat related stuff. These lessons carry out a lot.
No doubt. So you touched on, I think you used the terms, things came crashing down.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's a story there.
Oh, yeah. There's this is foreshadowing why I have such a heart for helping men today, because I, like, my story should be a cautionary tale. In the sense of, like, you know, I tried to do it all on my own, and I felt confident in all these things, and in reality, I was just a scared little boy acting like a man. And so, you know, I had started dating my wife prior to my deployment. We stayed together over my deployment, got married, you know, as soon as I came home, is the whole fairy tale thing, you know, military wedding and your dress blues and the saber arch and all that kind of stuff. And Life was pretty good. We were both excited, newlyweds. You know, I was at the top of my game in terms of my profession. You know, I'd been moved into a platoon leader position, so I was responsible for like 30 guys. Loved what I did. And things were good. And then, very long story short, is my wife and I both have pretty difficult childhoods. Mm-hmm. Hers probably worse than mine, but mine was very like emotionally manipulative, like through the divorce and everything. And so it really kind of crippled me emotionally. I was essentially stuck as like a teenager trying to go through life when you need to be a man about it, you know? So when we decided we want to start a family, just timing wise, you know, hey, we're gonna have some downtime. I'm probably not gonna deploy. Let's start a family. My wife had a very difficult birth process. I mean, she was in labor for like 50 plus hours. Oh, wow. I mean, really long time. So just from the get-go, she was already just depleted. Yeah. Like her body physically was just spent. And this really was kind of the catalyst for us to like all of our past kind of came to a head, right? Both of us. And, you know, she really, really, really struggled with severe postpartum. And I won't go into the details of that because that's her story to tell. But there was like hospital stints and stuff. It was really, really intense. And so I was totally caught off guard by this. And I had this ridiculous attitude of like, oh, she's doing this to me. You know, like there was this like selfish, vindictive attitude I had of like, you know, she's not a good enough mother that I, you know, I need to go to work and I'm in the army and all this kind of stuff. And she's killing my career and like just all these really negative thoughts.
Yeah.
And again, that's what a selfish teenager would say, not a man. And so at a time in my life when my wife needed her husband to be supporting her and caring for her and protecting her, I essentially gave her the exact opposite. And then again, fast forwarding, I pulled the trigger on getting out of the army because like, I don't think we can survive staying on active duty. Because for those who aren't aware, it's just, it's a very demanding lifestyle and it requires a lot of the family, not just the service member.
Okay.
Where it kind of demands your life. Mm-hmm. Like you live it daily and so does the family. Like you're gone a lot. They have to pick up a lot. There's a lot that goes into being a military family. And I was like, I just don't think we can make it with everything we're dealing with right now. So we got out. And I thought that would be a good move for us and that it would like somehow make it easier to work through the issues. But it actually just made it worse. So we got out, moved to Texas. You know, I got this job in corporate America thinking, oh, it'll be great now. I can stay home more. I'll make more money, all that kind of stuff. But really what happened then is the one thing that made me feel confident and secure and like was my identity was gone.
Yeah.
And so then the worst of me just came to the surface. Okay. And all that stuff that I never dealt with or was just blind to, I started acting like that. And we separated. I had a lawyer on retainer to divorce her. And it got to the point where I was so selfish and so angry that I started cheating on her. Mm. And so, you know, I just got to this point where I was looking at myself in the mirror like, who am I? What I don't believe in what I'm doing. I know this is wrong. Like, why am I doing this? And so started a very long road of like making amends and a lot of growth on myself, mm-hmm. therapy, counseling, all kinds of stuff. Just to name a few, I went to this place called Onsite here in Tennessee.
Oh, I'd never heard of that until yesterday.
Okay.
And I was out for dinner with someone and it got mentioned.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
It's pretty, they like founded the concept of like experiential therapy.
Okay.
So you go in with like a group of people, and so my wife and I went together once and then we both went individually.
Okay.
And in reality, we should have done it the other way. You should go individually first and then as a couple. But I learned a lot. So it was very helpful. I learned a lot about like why I was the way I was, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, this is the reason that, you know, this is the undealt thing. That helped a lot, but it was still very like, it wasn't actionable enough, you know? And so I was still really struggling to actually be a better man, mm-hmm. make amends for all of my mistakes and flaws. And then I went to this place called Mighty Oaks, which is founded by Chad Robichaux. He was a Marine Force Recon guy. And they're all over the country, but I went to the one in California. And that was the first place where I finally, for the first time in my life, owned my crap, okay. Like for real. Like yeah. There was no blaming anyone else. There was no excuses anymore. It was, nope, this is what I've done and I'm solely responsible mm-hmm. for it. For me, what it was, it's because it's all veterans and first responders there.
Okay.
And, you know, there was guys who had done some really hard stuff. You know, I looked up to these guys in my group mm-hmm. and them sharing their stories and talking about their struggles. I realized like, wow, I've just been making excuses for myself. And so That really was the shift in me, where it was also God too, right? It's a Christian organization, and it was the first time that I really surrendered to him too, with like, okay, Lord, I've been trying to tough my way through this and willpower my way through this. Obviously, it's not working. Yeah. And I'm obviously pretty stubborn because I refuse to admit that until now. But I basically just laid it all down. I was like, you know, help me, God. You're in control. And, you know, whatever you want from me is what I need to do. So, again, lots to unpack here. But, you know, my wife and I did decide to reconcile. She gave me grace for all of my indiscretions. And, you know, it's been a long journey to heal from that. But I almost destroyed my entire life simply because I was, one, trying to do it on my own. I isolated myself from all of the types of men who would tell me, no, dude, what are you doing? Stop.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about that? You know, like I kind of did that on purpose to myself. And that kind of victimhood mentality, you know, oh, she's doing this to me. It's, oh, because she did this, then I'll do that, you know? And man, I look back on it with just like such shame about who I used to be. And I know how bad that hurts to be in that place. And so that's why, like, fast forward to today, this is why I've literally made it my profession to help men not be me, you know, to stop it before we get to that point, because I know how disastrous it can be. And thankfully, I'll just close here with, you know, a lot of people will ask, like, well, how could your wife forgive you for that? You know, how could she possibly, you know, do that for you? And the answer is God, one. Obviously, he worked through her to allow her to have grace for me. And it's not like we just magically fixed everything. I mean, we've been married almost 11 years now.
Okay.
And, you know, this happened when we'd been married like 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long road. But the beauty of healing and the beauty of grace is that through this horrible thing that I did to my wife, the ultimate betrayal, and I can never take it back. This is forever something I've done. God has brought about such a gift that I don't know if I'd ever have experienced grace to that level ever, or ever will. You know what I mean? Because he was able to work through her and allow her to have that patience for me, we have the life we have today. I mean, my daughter's 9. We have worked very hard, both of us, to change kind of generational curses, to rewrite the story of our family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people ask me like what my legacy is. It's that my daughter will never deal with the things that we dealt with. And, yeah, so that's a lot of ground to cover there. I'm sure you've got a lot of questions, but at a very high level, that's kind of my, you know, all of my flaws and mistakes and why I'm so passionate about men taking ownership today. Because if you don't, this is what happens.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just one of many tales of men not owning up and taking action.
By the millions, if not the billions.
Yeah. And so we got to change it. So that's, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't want to go, I'm curious to know what was at the root of it for you, do you think? I'm assuming it's, you know, childhood stuff, maybe things with your parents, but when you said that you sort of worked through your stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can go as deep as you want, by the way.
What is that stuff? What is that?
Yeah.
What is that baggage? What is it that I'm trying to draw the connection between
definitely
the past and then?
And we can go as deep as you want.
Yeah, cool.
Everything's on the table.
Okay.
With me personally, number one, I was exposed to pornography very early, like 9 years old, 10 years old, something like that.
How?
Internet, magazines, you know, baseball buddies, found their dads, Playboy and stuff. And obviously we have a lot more data on this now and like what it does to the brain, but it's nothing good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was massively addicted to that basically my whole life. Mm. And the military's no better. You deploy and you like, everyone gives their hard drives around and shares everything they got for deployment because you don't have internet, you know? It was a humongous demon in my life. You know, I've still struggled with it even up to just recently. And I think every man has kind of a thing they struggle with, and that was mine.
Sure.
You know, so obviously that leads to very distorted ways already of thinking about sex, love, relationships, all of it, very messed up. Then you couple that with through my parents' divorce. Well, I'll back up a little bit. very intense household, right? Everything is life and death. If you don't do it perfectly, you're wrong. And it's just like, you know, just everything is high stress. Okay. So we walked on eggshells all the time.
You got siblings?
Yeah. So I'm the oldest. I have a younger brother who's 2.5 years younger, and then a younger sister who's 5 years younger. Very intense household. Arguments are very intense. You know, everything's just like to the max. In a lot of ways, it was really good because I'm a very hard worker, you know, very disciplined, all that kind of stuff. But that's not healthy. Like, sure. No one, you know, no healthy relationships exist in that kind of vacuum like that. But when they divorced, when they started splitting up, and all the parent, the divorce with my parents, because I was the oldest, information was overshared to me. And my mother, and I want to say this, like, I know my parents are both just hurt people. Like, I'm not mad at them. I hold no ill will to them. And I, like, this was part of my journey too, was letting this go. Yes. Right. So I don't say any of these things I'm about to say to wound them. I just want that to be clear to people listening that I want to share this because I don't think people realize how pervasive this problem is. And the term clinically is called emotional or covert incest. And it's when a parent talks to a child in a way that is to satisfy the parent's emotional needs, almost like it would be a girlfriend, boyfriend type of situation.
Got it.
And so as you can imagine, that creates a very distorted view also of relationships and boundaries when you're a child and your parent is essentially making you their emotional outlet and sharing intimate details of things that no parent should ever talk to their child about. You know, go talk to a friend. Like, if I was struggling, hey, Zuby, I need to talk to you about my marriage. Okay, man, you can take it because you're a grown-ass man, you know, whereas your child cannot. So that happened to me a lot. And that one was one I didn't even like realize that was like a problem until later in life when I had started making all of these mistakes. I had already been cheating on my wife. I owned up to my counselor first. I was like, I am a horrible human. I don't even know where to start fixing things. And she's like, well, you need to read this book called Silently Seduced. I think that's probably what happened to you. And I read that book and it was like, whoa, that was a lot to unpack. Okay. Because it made me realize how basically my whole childhood was not healthy. Mm. And to kind of be in the dark about that and then have the realization of it, it was like running into a brick wall. You know, it was like, whoa, the awareness of it really hit me. And I struggled for like 6 months. It was a long process to
Can you give a quick overview of the book? Because I haven't heard about it.
So it basically walks through different like vignettes of ways in which emotional manipulation plays into like emotional incest and how it damages. It's particularly, this happens mostly with mothers and sons.
Okay.
Just anecdotally, that's like what I've seen. The book is written that way. So I know people are going to get all upset about me for saying that, but it seems to be the reality of the situation. So I'm not attacking women. It's kind of like the Oedipus complex thing where it's damaging to a young male brain. And so like womanizing and pornography and all these kinds of things are actually pretty typical responses to that type of damage. Mm. And then there's another book called Healing the Wounded Heart by Dan Allender, where he spends an entire chapter on this topic as well. And he generally equates what happens in the brain is similar to like actual sexual abuse or assault. And so I'm not equating my experience to that for victims of that, because I know people who have suffered that. But the way that our brains try to protect itself is very similar, and it's not healthy, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're in total fight or flight response your entire life. So everything you're walking into. So the way that manifested as a husband was anytime my wife had an emotional issue, it meant she was attacking me. Mm-hmm. So then George gets really big and angry because the only way to defend myself is to fight. Mm-hmm. And so I was the worst possible husband that she could get in such a situation. When in reality, what's happening is she's my wife and she's coming to me because she's emotionally distressed by something, and I'm the one person who can cover her and help her with that. Yeah. And I failed to recognize that for a very long time to my, you know, regret. But that was kind of the two big things, was the pornography coupled with the emotional manipulation and how they kind of swirled together to make this, you know, kind of this shadow hanging over me.
From the tragedy of World War II comes the book Wounded Tiger by T. Martin Bennett, the unbelievable true story of the pilot who led the Pearl Harbor attack, whose life was transformed by an American prisoner and by a girl he never met. With an 82% five-star rating, One reader of Wounded Tiger called it one of the most gripping stories of World War II. Another stated, the absolute best book I've ever read. And another reader called it a thrilling, heart-racing, emotional journey.
This is our day. Today, our opportunity to mark our place in history. The world will soon know that we are the new samurai. The Empire's fate depends on the result of this battle. Let every man do his utmost.
Wounded Tiger is available now on Amazon in hardcover, Kindle ebook, and on Audible. Visit woundedtiger.com/Zubi and grab yourself a copy. That's woundedtiger.com/Zubi. Check out the link in the description and don't miss out on the adventure. Become more just increasingly obvious and apparent to me as I've gotten older and met so many people from so many countries from all walks of life and different backgrounds and situations is I'm increasingly, like, I've always known it from childhood, but it's becoming just more apparent to me how important parenting and family dynamics are.
Oh, yeah.
I think people know that it's important, but I think it's still understated and underrated just how much it impacts people on so many different levels across multiple generations. I think that in the modern West in particular, and perhaps the USA is the epitome of this regard, is there's really such an individualistic and at times selfish mindset where people just don't think long term and about how their actions can affect and influence other people, right? So you see this with everything from the extraordinarily high rate of frivolous divorce and how, you know, and you'll, and even the response to it, you'll hear people say like, well, why would anyone, you know, why would anyone stay together if they're not happy? Right. You know, that kind of mindset, which in most of the world sounds psychotic and through most of history would sounded crazy. Like there's a lot of reasons why people might stay together if they're not, even if they're not temporarily happy, especially if there are children. It's like there's lots of people involved and lots at stake here in this situation. And I find that, you know, I try not to be, I'm not a parent yet, and I try not to be overly sort of harsh and critical of parents, but just the mindset that I notice in some people is so, it's just so me
focused. Right, what's in it for me.
And they don't realize how these things affect their children.
Yeah.
How this is going to affect them as they are still children and as they're adults. And, you know, I think one of the greatest blessings I have is, you know, when I talk to people, you know, about my own family or about my, I think my parents have been together, married for 48 years
That's
now.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I've got a very big, wide family, like super close.
Yeah.
And it's just more and more obvious to me, number one, how increasingly rare that is. And number two, how much of a blessing and an advantage, or to use the word privilege, it is to me and to other people who have experienced that because you've had the, you've seen the modeling.
Yeah.
Right. So we are all children, even adults, things are modeled to us. And it's kind of strange to expect someone to know how to do something that they've never been instructed or modeled to do. And people pick up on different patterns. And of course, patterns can be broken. Of course.
It's hard.
Yeah. Patterns are broken all the time. But it's just, I've spoken to just so many people now.
Yeah.
And you're the same. And you just see these, you see certain patterns. And there's just the human psychology, the way that the mind, body, and spirit are connected, the way that this thing that happened way back then can impact how someone does something now.
Yeah.
And I wish there was, I wish there was just more of an acknowledgement and a caution around all of this.
Yeah.
I don't think that, you know, a lot of, put it point blank. Like, I'm not saying in your particular situation, but a lot of parents mess up their kids.
Yeah.
Like this is by the millions, and you'll have adults behaving in certain ways, and it'll be like, why is that guy doing that? Why is that woman doing that? Why is she doing? And then if you were to sort of rewind and look at the situation, it's like, oh, okay, well that happened and that happened and that happened and that happened, and they never learned how to deal with this and repair all of this damage. Maybe it wasn't even acknowledged. and now there's just all of this dysfunction. And then oftentimes that dysfunction is now passed on again to another generation. And it's quite tragic, really. I think it's one of the biggest issues that is occurring in this nation. And I think, you know, people are understandably very sensitive to it, right? People get offended. People are, hey, don't talk about this because, you know, because of this, because of that, you know, it kind of hits people there. But I think it's so important for our generation and I guess younger ones to, you know, be aware of this and to do the best job that we can, particularly people who are parents. But even if you're not a parent, you still have an impact on the younger generation. I mean, I've already got 10 nieces and nephews, and I'm influencing.
Yeah, aunts,
I don't know,
uncles,
how many,
cousins. I mean, all of it. You're a role model.
I'm connected to a lot of people out there who are following me and watching what I'm doing. And I don't know. I'm just thinking of all these things. Like, there's a lot of there are many things that just kind of hit me really hard over the last few years. And I'm just like, okay, this is like that. Oh, okay, that's what that means. Oh, okay, that's why. Even when I look at the way certain traditions run and the reason certain there's a certain order to doing things that has typically existed in different countries, cultures, religions, and so on for millennia. Okay. Right. And a modern person might look at it and go like, we don't need that anymore. Why is it that way? Let's just reinvent the wheel. And when that happens at scale, it becomes more and more obvious why certain things are typically done in a certain way and in a certain order and with a certain function. It's like, oh, okay, that's not just some silly old custom or tradition. It's to avoid this problem.
Exactly.
Or it's to prevent this from happening. Or it's to minimize it. And nothing's perfect, right? There's no perfect system, and humans aren't perfect. But yeah, that's just a sort of thought that's that's just becoming more and more apparent to me.
Yeah, and I mean, I really try and beat that drum, especially with the men. It's like, it's your responsibility.
Yeah.
Like, you're the CEO of a company. Everything the company does or fails to do is your responsibility. You're a family man. You're a husband. Your marriage is your responsibility, first and foremost. So stop blaming other people. You want it to be better? Take action. Mm-hmm. And so, to your point of like, cycles can be broken. Yeah, it's taken me over a decade of like a lot of work, lots and lots and lots of work. And I'm fortunate enough that I've been able to afford a lot of the work that I needed to do. Most people can't, right? So wherever you are, however much money you make or what background you come from, like, getting it right with your kids, with your marriage first, is the most important thing a man should focus on, right? Save for like exceptional case. Like, honestly, you're an exceptional case, right? You have all this ability to influence people around the world and travel and all that kind of thing, right? Okay, you're not the norm. I think we can both agree to that, right? Most people work their job, they live their life, and they're going to do what they do until they pass away, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the number one thing they should focus on is their family first, because when you mess that up, you're just perpetuating the brokenness and it spreads outward like a plague. Whereas if you fix it, instead of a plague spreading, you're actually the cure.
Absolutely.
Right? And so, you know, I've made tons of mistakes and it's been really hard. And, but it wasn't until I stopped playing the victim, right? Oh, I'm, you know, well, no, because this happened to me, then blah, 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 just excusing away my behavior. Until that really died in me, nothing changed. So when that died, and then I just truly surrendered to Christ and said, you know, Lord, I know better. I clearly have not been doing better.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to put you back in the driver's seat. Those two things are what actually shifted the direction of my life. And it wasn't until that actually happened that our marriage started to improve, my ability to be a better dad improved. My emotional regulation is significantly better now. I think this is another thing that most men are just really, at least in the West, very incapable of, is understanding that you are an emotional being. Men handle emotions differently than women, but it doesn't mean that you have zero emotion. Stoicism is not the absence of them, it's the control over them.
Yes.
And your emotional regulation, to me now, when I look at men or leaders, is for the thing I look at most to see how good they really are. So if your six-year-old gets frustrated and it makes you lose your frame, are you really leading or are your emotions in charge? You're gonna let this little kid throw you off your game?
Yeah.
Real manly. Oh, your wife is struggling with something, so you're gonna blow up at her? Real manly, dude. Like, so when you frame it in that way, probably stings a little bit.
Yeah.
But men need their cages rattled to realize, like, guys, this is serious.
Yes.
Like, getting this wrong repeatedly over time is why we have the culture we have today. And it's got to stop.
It's a tough one as well, because, you know, I've thought about this issue and talked about it a lot, which is we live in this really weird time where societally and culturally, there is 1 foot in traditionalism and patriarchal expectations and gender roles and traditionalism. And there's another foot in this progressive, feminist, egalitarian, men and women are basically the same type of mode. And I find that regardless of people's sort of viewpoints, there's this sort of flip-flopping that constantly happens between them. And I think this is confusing both to a lot of men and to women. So people can say whatever they want about the past and the old school ways of doing things and traditionalism and very clearly defined gender roles, men be masculine, women be feminine, men protect and provide, women, you know, look after the children, look after the household primarily, and so on. There's some overlap. The complementarianism.
Yes.
And now there's been this squashing.
And we're all the same.
Of the gender. Yes, yeah. Right. Sometimes very explicitly, sometimes rather implicitly, there's the expectation of, you know, you're simultaneously telling men to man up and man down. Simultaneously,
yep.
Right?
Like, and you're telling women to be full-time mothers and full-time professionals.
Exactly, right? You go, girl. You got to be a boss babe, but also you've. And I think that I don't get psyoped by this too much because of my background and my personality type and so on. But I can easily see how for lots of young men and women, this is just confusing because it's like to an 18-year-old guy who's kind of growing up in the UK or in the USA or in Canada. I can easily, especially if he's not from a super solid background, doesn't have like, you know, a super strong father and mother who he's seen that complementarianism, I can easily see how they just be like, gosh, like what am I meant to do?
Yeah.
Right? Even if they go on a date, like, am I meant to pay for the bill? Because there's a school of thought, which is like, yeah, you're the man, you pay the bill. And then there's the also the, well, wait, isn't it supposed to be egalitarian and 50-50? And hey, maybe the woman is even earning more money than I am, right? Yeah. Like why should I? Wait, just because I'm the one with the XY chromosomes, like I pay the bill? That doesn't really seem. And then the expectations on the other side are kind of like, even if he accepts that, right? There's a lot of, there'll be a lot of young women who they also have that expectation of him. But then if he were like, if he had an expectation of the woman to do a womanly thing, right, now he's...
How dare you? You're trying to control me?
Exactly, right? Now he's a misogynist or he's sexist or he's a dinosaur or so on. And so I just think there's this constant confusion in the media and on social media and from other men and from women. There's just very confused mixed messaging being shot at people all the time. And I think that's why you get a lot of young men right now who are kind of just like either they're just checking out.
Yep.
And they're just like, you know what?
Forget it.
I'm just not going to do this, right? It's not worth the hassle. Maybe they get lost in pornography, or they just very casually date, or they just play their video games and check out.
Right.
And then you also have a lot of young women on the flip side who are just confused. It's like, well, do I? You know, I maybe they're more traditional minded and they would like to just have a man who they can rely on and who will protect and provide. But it's like, well, can you even trust a man? Like, what if something goes wrong? And then I don't have my own ability to do this and that. And I just don't think society's ever been here before. I just don't think we've been here before.
Not and to this degree.
On mass by the millions.
Yeah.
People are trying to like work out, okay, what does the new paradigm look like? Do we go full egalitarian and just like drop all of these gendered expectations? People don't seem to like that, but then also people don't really want to embrace the traditionalism and everything that comes with that and all the expectations of both sexes that come with that. That seems a little like, ooh, that's a little backwards and a bit too religious and a bit too stifling and so on. So I don't know, I don't know where it goes here. I mean, I know my views.
Yeah.
But my own views, even, you know, there will be people who think that I'm a dinosaur.
Sure.
Because of the way I view these things.
Yeah. Well, I'm okay with whatever people label me. You know, I'll just stick to my clients, right? Yeah. Let's just talk about some empirical data here, right? I train men to be authentically masculine, and we can walk through that if you'd like. But as soon as I get them acting like men again in their marriages, leading, taking responsibility. You know, you're not just the family butler, you're the family captain. You actually lead your family, you have vision, you take ownership of things. You're lightening the load for your wife, not because she's weak, but because it's your job. And you don't shift blame to her and everything. it's amazing how much more sex they start to have in their marriage, and how much more she seems to like him, and how much she likes following him after just 12 weeks.
Biology.
Right? It's almost like maybe men and women are actually different, and maybe we are designed to do different things. And the fact that we've been trying to deny that is why we're so depressed and stuck on SSRIs and can't keep our marriages together and all this kind of stuff. And I was the same way. I was not – so here's the irony. This is the really hard-to-swallow pill. I've led men in combat, right? I've been a successful army leader, and, oh, I know leadership and blah, 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 blah. And I did absolutely none of it in my marriage. And so I use this test called the shopping cart test with men. It's like, if you go to the grocery store with your wife – and you know you're there to get all the groceries for the week, right? Do you walk in and look at the shopping cart and go, hey, babe, do we need a shopping cart? Do you defer to your wife to make that simple decision? Mm-hmm. And then now extrapolate that. How many times over the week do you do that on tiny things? Yep. You're literally wearing her out with tiny decisions because you're refusing to lead because you're afraid of her getting upset with you or societal pressures and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I had this epiphany of like, holy cow, why am I deferring to my 5 foot, 100 pound, tiny little wife about a shopping cart?
Because society told you to.
Correct. Right. And so the second I stopped doing all that, and people mishear this a lot and they think, oh, well, for a man to be a leader, he's like lording over his wife and like, make me a sandwich, lady. Yeah. And it's like, no, that's also not leadership. That's called a tyrant. But actual leadership, when you're caring about the outcomes for everyone and just making the hard but necessary decisions or preemptively making ones so it doesn't, your people don't have to bear the weight of it, everyone wins, men and women. And so at a very high level, men are designed to cover ground, to initiate, to build, to take things, to make it, and women amplify it. So you give her a house, she turns it into a home. You give her your sperm, she grows a life. Like, women beautify and nurture and multiply, and that's the most feminine superpower that we want to try and pretend isn't their superpower. And like, well, no, just go get a job like a man.
It's been pathologized.
Just go be a man. Okay, well, then you're degrading the thing that only feminine can provide. And I can't, so like with my daughter, I can't make her a woman. I can't draw out womanhood because I am not a woman. Yeah. I can teach her some really valuable things, and I'm modeling for her the type of man that she should expect to marry, but I cannot make her into a woman.
Sure.
Only my wife can do that because I am not a woman. And just in the same way with sons, only the dad can draw out the boy into a man. Women can't do it. And we love to try and pretend that we can just cross it all around and it doesn't matter. And it's like, well, it's not interchangeable.
And that second dynamic you mentioned is that's millions of households now.
That's in America, I think it's something as like 70% of boys are raised pretty much predominantly by women only.
Yeah.
They have a single mother and they go to school and all their teachers are female. So we wonder why we're so lost as men in the modern age. You know, masculinity is not toxic. The absence of it is clearly. And so what I try and train, and maybe we just rattle through these real quick.
No, it's all
the
good.
Four pillars of
no rush at all, man.
Four
no
pillars
rush.
Of authentic manhood. Is king, warrior, mentor, and lover. And when a man does all four of these things equally, he is now really a man. And so, king, men are built for leadership. At a minimum, it's yourself and your immediate circle. So if you're single, it's like your closest friends and things like that, right? Your immediate family or your married family, right? You're married and you have kids and all that kind of stuff. That's your calling in life, is to lead what you're responsible for. And we're better with it. That pressure, when you have something that you're building, we're like trucks. You put a little weight in the back, they drive and handle better, right? It's the same thing. The warrior pillar, men love to focus on physical fitness, which absolutely you should be physically fit, be dangerous. Where are the threats really coming from today? It's personal courage. It's strength of will. It's standing up to injustice and, you know, these crazy ideologies that are indoctrinating children. Where are all the men? For the last 40 years, where have the men been to say enough's enough, no more? We've been too afraid of outrage from people or getting canceled that we've stayed silent and have let this perpetuate now to generations of children and to our point. We're still going to see the ripple effects of this 100 years from now.
For sure.
Like, we're just now scratching the surface of like how bad this is. So it's going to get worse before it gets better. That's the warrior pillar, is we're best when we're defending the innocent. And when we don't do that, this is why it's so problematic for men to be cowardly, is because it's literally the antithesis of what we are designed to do. And that's why it's such a big shame generally around the world for a man to be a coward, is because it essentially means you're not a man. And most of that today in the modern Western world is not physical violence. It's defending from the kind of intangible
ideological
stuff. Yes. Strength of character and values. The mentor pillar is, you know, in order to first teach someone else, you have to get better yourself. So it's kind of that continuous improvement. But there is something that men love to do where when we train someone else to succeed – it's almost as fulfilling or more fulfilling than when you achieve yourself. Mm. When I look back at my time on active duty and stuff, it's not what I did. I look back on the moments, just like, man, I helped this person reach a new height or achieve a thing, or like I saw the look on their face when they overcame a struggle. Those are my favorite moments from my service. It's not my personal achievements. And again, I think every man can relate to that in some regard. When you help, like if you're in a professional network and you help your buddy start his business effectively or something, like it's very rewarding, and men should do that because that's how we make society better. Is we're training others to be their best. It's human potential. And then the last one is the one that most men don't use at all.
Okay.
And it's the lover pillar. So when you, if I asked you, what are traits of a man? You're going to say things like physical fitness, you know, courage, strength, you know, leadership, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. You're probably not going to say empathy or understanding or compassion.
Wouldn't be top of my list.
Right. The strongest, toughest, most masculine men are highly empathetical. They understand emotions very well. They're not overcome by them, but they are highly attuned to them. And especially if you're married, you should be a student of your wife. You should be very attuned to her emotional state so that you can lead her through her overwhelming emotions and bring her back to safe consistency, right? And earlier, like we talked about, if you are owned by your emotions and you're all over the place, well, now your emotions are leading your household, not you. So everyone is a prisoner to whether or not dad is angry or is dad happy. Yeah. Is it a good time to talk to dad? Now they are prisoners to your lack of understanding and empathy. So men who do the other three pillars first and then master the lover pillar transform into a tender warrior. They become hard for the world and, you know, the defender and protector and provider, but then within the walls of their kingdom, their family, their friend groups, they are this different thing that gives 100% of their heart and soul to the people that actually matter to them. And it's the driving force for everything they do. And a lot of guys today are so cut off from emotion that, like, I mean, I ask people all the time, like, do you have a close friend? And they'll say no. And I'm like, so when's the last time you told a buddy, like, hey, man, I really respect you? Ooh, I don't know. Why not? Well, that seems like kind of gay. Well, how alone do you feel right now? Dude, so alone. Maybe, you know, you've shut down like a robot and you need to realize that, you know, you're a human too, and you need to also engage in empathetical engagements with other men and your wife and all that kind of stuff. But the lover pillar is kind of like the catalyst for everything, right? If you're bound by love and understanding and empathy, you're a better king, you're a better warrior, you're a better mentor, right? Because it inherently ensures that you are meeting people where they are and giving them what they need. And I go as far as to say, I'm a better military commander now, now that I have empathy and compassion, because I don't just rule with an iron fist anymore. Like, I can actually help my people in much better ways. It's not all just harshness.
I've just had a...
So even in the military, there's a place for empathy.
I've just had an interesting thought about this, especially given the order you put those things in. Was it five pillars? Four pillars.
Four. And you can kind of think like the Greek structure, like the Parthenon-looking thing. They have to be equal.
I think like the first three, I would say, are aspects of being good at being a man. And the fourth one is what makes a good man.
Yeah.
So you can be a good. People can get confused.
You can play the part with the first three.
If you're a good man, but you lack those earlier three, right? Like, you know, then that's the quote unquote nice guy.
Yeah.
That can be the quote unquote nice guy, right? The women are like,
he's a pushover.
Nice. He's a pushover, right?
Which
is then
leading.
If you have the first three, but you lack empathy and compassion, you might be good at being a man, as in you're strong, you're courageous, you're confident, you're competent, but you're so harsh and lacking in empathy that you don't actually treat other people well, including people who you are close to. So I think it's kind of interesting how I can think of, you know, I can think of men who embody like those first three, but they're lacking the fourth, or they have the fourth. The fourth is they're all about the fourth one.
And they have no king,
no warrior. No, but no one would take their lead on anything. In fact, they're just what in England we might refer to as a wet wipe, right? Like they have no backbone. They're just like, right? Like, you know, you know the type.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
you know.
Yeah, they're like a sack of jelly. You know, they have no spine. Yeah, another kind of like way to visualize this. All leadership is universal with these three legs of leadership. Like a stool, you take one leg away, the whole thing collapses, right? It's authority, responsibility, and compassion. Mm-hmm. So the pillars exist for men, but all leadership positions, you need these three things. Mm-hmm. But men need to really hone this because most men have a family, right? Yeah. You need to own it. But authority is you actually have the power to change the outcomes. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys today, to your point, they have zero authority in their households. Yes. Their wife runs everything, and she doesn't want to because now she has to be the man and the woman in the marriage, and that does not feel good. So you actually have to have the authority and take action on it to change the outcomes of whatever it is. Responsibility means you own the outcomes. Mm-hmm. You don't pass blame. And it doesn't mean necessarily fault, but like think of it from a business point of view. Okay, if you're the manager or CEO, you may not have been the one to mess up the process or whatever that cost you guys money, but you're certainly responsible for fixing it for the next time, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing with leadership across the board. And the last one is compassion. Again, this is where a lot of men miss the point. Your people know, or you love your people a lot, and they know it.
Yeah.
And the know it part is where a lot of guys struggle. And so that doesn't just apply to like marriage or business. It also applies to man to man with your peers. So to show men clearly how important it is that you have other guys in your life that you can say things like, I love you, man. Mm-hmm. I respect you. I really like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that not be weird, which for most American men, that's like the scariest thing they could mm-hmm. possibly say.
It's part of the psyop.
It is part of, sure. Yeah, I don't know. I think it really is.
The idea that
they live lives of quiet desperation.
Yes. The idea that telling another man that you love him is like kind of gay, kind of weird. Like that whole idea, they've almost like pathologized.
They did. Yeah. Because you don't want
to
be.
Yeah. People have kind of like pathologized male friendship to the point that guys might be afraid to certainly to say to a male friend that they love them or to hug them or to have certain conversations. It's kind of like, no, that's gay.
Yeah. Well, and you see it even
really pathological.
It's gone so far, like now you see people saying like Frodo and Sam from Lord of the Rings were clearly gay. And it's like, no, it was written by a World War I veteran who literally held his friends in his arms dying in trenches in France. And so, you know, those characters are kind of modeling that deep brotherhood that happens when your life is being extinguished, right? So, no, it's not gay or heterosexual. It's just called brotherhood. Yeah. And this is where the English language struggles because we only have one word for love, whereas like, you know, in Hebrew, there's three, there's eros and agape and all that kind of stuff, right? But there's different levels of love, right? The way I love my wife is not the way I would love you in a masculine friendship, right? It's a very different.
The way you might love pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Love pizza.
Yeah.
Definitely a very different level of love than what I have for my wife and child, you know? But to drive this point home, I have conversations like this every single day of my life. Men, you have to have friends. You have to have masculine friends that you look up to, that you respect, that you can say things like, I really respect what you're doing, man. It's outstanding. I want to be more like you. Hey, can we get lunch next week? Because I just need more of your influence in my life. I talk like that all the time, and I have tons of masculine friends now, mentors, guys that I look up to. They all do the same thing. It's not weird for any of them. It's weird to not do this. Yeah. It's weird to be so alone and so isolated that you're like, I don't even know who I can call. I don't know who to pick up the phone and call right now because I'm so overwhelmed. And, dude, I just think they'll think I'm weird.
Why do you think that's become so common? We hear a lot about the sort of male loneliness epidemic, obviously in terms of suicide rates. I know in the UK, like for men under the age of, I think, 45, from like 18 to 45, the most common cause of death is suicide. Right?
I believe
men taking themselves out.
Yeah.
And so that's clearly hinting at something that is deeply wrong in society and culture. And a lot of men say, as you said, say that they don't have any close friends, which I'm super extroverted and have been for a long time. So the idea of the math almost kind of doesn't math for me. I'm like, how can a guy not have any close friends? But clearly that is a thing. So how does that happen?
I think it's a lot of factors. I think it's men being raised, like we said, by women, right? I think it's 70%+ of the average American modern man is raised mostly by women, either through single parent households with a mom and then at school, lots of feminine influence. And again, this isn't meaning women are bad. Right? It's the lack of masculinity. We need both.
Yeah.
Like a boy needs a mother and a father.
Should be obvious.
Right. So whoever's listening and you're trying to like pick this apart, I have immense respect for women and my wife can do things that I could never do. And I have nothing but respect and care for her and I want the best for her. It's not because I look.
Are you suggesting men can't give birth?
Oh, yeah. I am absolutely suggesting that men cannot give birth.
How dare you?
In fact, yeah. So, but my point is, we can have both and not hate the other, right? And literally, I like went viral on Reddit this last weekend for a post like that where I was like, my mission, I used to train men for battle, and now I train them to be family leaders. Yeah. And that was like, well, how dare you only help men? Why don't you help women? It's like, well, to your point, so many men are so lost, they can't even. They have to come find a guy like me to help them unlearn all of this being stuck. But so I think it's the way they're raised, for one. I think you hit on it, like, oh, you're afraid of being labeled gay or feminine or something because you talk to other men. And it doesn't have to just be talk either. Like, this is, initially there's some like, hey, man, we need to get to know each other. But after that, it's like, let's go build our businesses or let's go like take the kids out, or like you do things together. Yeah. It's not just talk therapy, right? So that's another belief there. I think it's also a lot of kind of your point earlier of like, we teeter between the traditionalism versus modernity, right? And so men are like, well, I've got to provide and I've got to protect and all this kind of stuff. But then if I try to do these other things and try to lead my household, then I'll be labeled as toxic and everything. And so it's this internal strife of, you know, you're only living like 50% of what you're supposed to be, or if that, right? Like, so those four pillars, if you're not living all four, you're at best, you're getting a C, right? You're getting a 75% with three of them. Most men are walking around with maybe like, what, 30% of the equation. That feels terrible. Mm. Like internally, you know, deep down, you know, like, oof, I should be able to stand up to this or whatever, right? Like if most men are honest with themselves, they would admit to that, right? And I think that's a huge piece of it, is that internal, it's the internal dissension, not keeping the promises to yourself is the most destructive piece of it when you pile on the other things. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I start with men first, is we rebuild the man's self-confidence first, and then everything else comes. You can't do it the other way around. Like, until you love yourself and respect yourself and hold your own promises to yourself, like use fitness. Yeah. If you can't control what you eat and stay consistent in the gym, do you really think your wife is gonna trust that like magically you're just gonna change the course of your family now? Mm. Doubt it, bro. So that's why I start with fitness really quickly, because it's an easy, quick win for men to be like, okay.
I say this to people all the time.
I'm building the discipline muscle. Mm-hmm. And people like Andrew Huberman are proving this now scientifically, that like you can literally train your ability to endure pain and grow discipline like you grow your muscles with fitness. So little wins for men is huge, because it gets them in motion. And that sense of loneliness and despair goes away very quickly. I'm talking like three weeks or less with most of my clients. So I don't think I like crack some secret code. I just think it's how we are, and we've denied it. Like as a culture, we've tried to stray away from this because we want to tap dance around the issue because it might offend someone. And that's the thing, is we need to stop worrying about offending others, because it's like, I'd rather offend some people and keep a man on this earth instead of killing himself 100% of the time.
Dude, you're nailing something that I've said multiple times before, and people get confused when I say it because they think I'm being hyperbolic, and I'm not. I often say that political correctness is deadly.
It is. Yeah.
On multiple levels.
Politeness is not kindness.
Yes. Because to solve any problem, first you need to be able to diagnose it. And 100%. To be able to diagnose it, you need to be able to talk about it.
Yes.
So if people are so afraid to talk about the dangers of obesity, and instead you're leaning into body positivity and fat acceptance and you can be healthy at any size, that quite literally is killing people.
Yes.
That messaging is killing people.
Absolutely.
If you are so afraid to talk about the downsides of the impact of fatherless homes and familial breakdown, and you can't talk about that, you might offend this person or that person or whatever. If you can't even talk about that issue, then there are millions of people who are going to suffer intergenerational ramifications of that. And it seems like on a societal level, it's kind of collectively been agreed in the modern Western world. This is not a global thing. There's plenty of places where else be very straight up with it, right?
Yeah.
That it's worse to hurt someone's feelings potentially than to say something which is uncomfortable but truthful.
Yeah.
And actually, if people take that on board, then they can now make certain changes individually and collectively to improve that situation. And I see a lot of the decline that is going on just from this constant, oh, you got to dance around this issue and avoid that, and we can't talk about that, yeah. and ooh, that's too harsh, and that might be offensive to that group or that person or whatever. And it's just like, guys, and ironically, it's extraordinarily unmasculine.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly my point is, you know, most men I work with, or most like what I see across the board, is men are afraid of confrontation. Mm-hmm. Because we've been led to believe that confrontation inherently means there's anger. And that's not the case. Like, and so I'll give an example. I had to kind of like do this with my wife recently where, you know, she's very like, because of her background, like any kind of intense conversation is yelling to her. And mm-hmm. it's like, babe, no, there's a big difference between George yelling and like being a little bit stern with a guy, right? And it's also man to man, right? Mm-hmm. So we had this like tech come out to work on our AC or whatever. And it was just this big boondoggle and he forgot the thing and all this stuff. And so I like, after being patient with him for a little bit, I was like, okay, dude, look, you need to call your office right now, figure out what the problem is. I'm not going to spend all day doing this. So like in 10 minutes, I want an answer. If not, like leave and we'll reschedule this thing. And my wife was like, honey, you're being too mean. I'm like, no, honey, this is like a little bit of confrontation means we both get on with our day faster in a more reasonable solution, as opposed to tap dancing around like, well, I don't want to hurt his feelings. Yeah. Like, and he's a man too. It's like, I'm not going to talk to a woman that way. Right. But like he can take it. He's a tough, you know, hardworking guy, blue collar guy. Like he needs a little bit of a firmer touch. Yes. Just like a soldier does. Yes. Like I don't talk to my daughter like I talk to soldiers. You know, sometimes they need a little bit of a kick in the butt, right? But I say all that to say that like that belief that confrontation means that there's hatred or anger is super dangerous, because men should be confrontational. You should be a man of standards. You should say, no, I don't agree with that. You can live that if you want, but it's not coming over here. Yeah. This is my line. Do not cross it. And if you do cross it, here's what the consequences are going to be. And then you're a man of your word. Mm. And this is what I train men to do. When a man can finally do that for himself and he can say the powerful word of no to someone else, not out of hate, not out of, you know, anger or rage or whatever, but just from a nope, I know what I'm about. I have my beliefs. These are my values. You don't get to change it for me. Whew, he breathes deep again. You can see a man's physical stature change when he is able to do that for himself. And if more of us did that in the Western world, this stuff starts to die very fast. This is a lack of masculinity standing up to say enough's enough. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing too. A lot of people accuse me of a lot of things, and I'm not even really like famous or anything.
Join the party, man.
Critics, yes, you know this very well. Critics will love to say all these things, right? But everything I do and say is from a position of love for every man out there who's hurting like I was.
Yes.
And I mean, dude, I looked at my Glock and thought about it, okay? Like, I mean, those thoughts come out of nowhere, right? I had never really considered it. There's like two times in my life I thought about it. And like, that's scary stuff. Mm. And I don't think people really understand that. But most men today are living quiet lives, or they're stuck in quiet desperation. And so the only option they feel available to them is suicide. Mm. And if we don't ruffle a few feathers to pierce through and get to those types of guys, nothing changes. It just gets worse. And because you want to be polite, well, you're not being kind. There's no love in that. You just don't want the surface level offense, mm-hmm. because you'd have to think about something that is a little bit hard for you. And again, I don't care what people label me, because my mission is to save men from that darkness. And by extension, that saves families. That makes life better for everyone. And it's just, it's very frustrating, because when you see an authentic man be a little bit firm with some people, but totally in control, we all recognize it. Yes. And no one goes, oh, that guy's a jerk. They just go, oh, that guy's a good leader. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think of like a businessman or something running a large organization. They're short, direct, and to the point, not because they hate you, but because it's like there's a lot going on. It's just how it is.
Yes.
But then we take it outside to these, you know, interpersonal relationships, and now he's a jerk or he's toxic. And it's like, no, that's just not how it is.
Yeah. People often, and I don't even think the conflation is necessarily intentional most of the time, but I think that oftentimes competency and confidence are misconstrued as tyranny or arrogance or even some type of hatred or mm-hmm. meanness. I think, again, because, you know, I think a lot of the stuff we're now dealing with is honestly, It's a long-term consequence of comfort and abundance.
Oh, absolutely.
I very much think that countries like the USA, countries like the UK, are socially and culturally if I really look at it, they're sort of suffering at the hands of their own success.
Yes, it's made us weak.
Life has become so comfortable, and survival has never been easier. Okay, I'm not saying it's easy to necessarily thrive, right? Someone will be like, well, what about the economy and inflation and so on, right? Yeah, but in terms of like basic human survival,
yeah,
has never been easier. Worldwide, even outside of the West, there are now more people. Obesity is killing more people than starvation is now. First time ever in human history.
Yeah, which has
been the case.
Kind of insane to think about.
Yes, it's completely insane. So the abundance, there are more people dying from eating too much than from not having enough to eat. In the past, it was always droughts and famine and war and pestilence, and people were just dying left, right, and center because there wasn't enough. Now we have so much food and so much to eat and drink that's a problem, right? People are sedentary, literally barely going outside, not getting enough sunlight. Mm-hmm. Also, life has just become so easy that you don't need to go through a lot of the things that in the past you would have just gone through in your teens,
maybe in your early 20s. Resilience.
Yes, just as a survival mechanism.
Right.
It teaches a lot of these lessons. When you're talking about things like, you know, male bonding or even female bonding, it's like, yeah, you just do that by default of living your life. Like, of course, you go through these things, certain rites of passage, whereas now you can, if you live in a developed country, you can basically stay in the adolescent phase indefinitely.
Yes.
I would imagine, I didn't exist 100 plus years ago, but as I understand it, through most of human history, adolescence was a really short period.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You're a child, the gap between, you're a child, and then kind of pretty quickly, you're an adult.
Well, even like World War II era America, like there's, I mean, I was very fortunate to talk to a lot of like World War II vets before, you know, they passed away. They're pretty much all gone now, but the norm was that most American families, like we weren't some massive industrialized country, you know, the war kind of made it that way, but most Americans live like really small rural lives. And like by the time you were 13, you'd go to school for like 2 hours and come home and like work on the farm with dad or you guys didn't eat. You know, and that was like most Americans. There was a lot of the population was that way in the 40s, you know. So it wasn't even 100 years ago. It was, you know, 80 now, I guess. But we live – like if you're born in the USA or the UK, even to a like substandard condition in these countries, you hit the jackpot in human history.
Yep.
Like you have more at your disposal than most humans who have ever lived have ever had. Like
top 1%.
Kings had less, you know, like literal kings 1,000 years ago had like less sometimes. So it's, again, not to downplay people's hardship. Like I have personal friends who have been through some of the most ridiculous stuff. Mm-hmm. And like I am very grateful that my pain and experiences do not match theirs. But all these guys I know who have been through the literal worst, like, brother, I would not want to live in their life for a minute that's been that bad, you know? They reject victimhood.
Yep.
Nope, it's on me to change it. I don't get to blame my past for whatever. I need to grow, I need to change, and I have disadvantages, sure, but no one owes me anything. I have to team up with other men that I respect who will help me. And so I just don't believe any of the victimhood stuff. And I know you talk about it in your lyrics a lot too. Like you kind of shatter the norm because like, aren't you supposed to be oppressed? Because we have different skin tone. So clearly we can't be friends, you know? And all of that has been weaponized into the feminine, into the masculine, into politics, into schools. And so the root cause here, I think, is like what you were saying. It comes back to like the words themselves, right? They've been co-opted to, oh, don't do that because then you're gay, or don't do this because then you're this. And you were talking about like tap dancing around the issues. That's a codependent abusive relationship. Like every therapist would talk, you know, walking on eggshells is literally like what children of alcoholics and drug addicts do. Like it's literally the most bad thing that a child can be like living with. And that's our cultural norm.
Yes.
And we're like, okay with it? Again, where are the men standing up and being like, no, dude, I'm okay ruffling some feathers and you being mad at me because it's going to save these 100 people.
Yeah. And I do think that there's – I've seen particularly over the past 7 or 8 years and even with the rise of certain people, maybe I could include myself in this, is that there is an increasing appetite, hunger, thirst for authenticity and truth-telling and people just saying it like it is and not being constantly afraid of being canceled for this or for that. And people are looking for individuals and for voices who can lead the way in that regard and who can help to encourage and embolden other people, oftentimes just through example, to be like, oh, okay, we can talk about this issue, or okay, cool, someone recognizes. Because something people often say to me is that I say what they're thinking. So maybe they don't have the courage, or they don't have the ability to articulate, or they haven't quite connected the dots, they just don't have the platform.
I think a very real piece is they'll get fired. Or there's the fear that you're going to get fired.
There's the fear they'll get fired. It's normally
the weaponization of the HR department.
Yes,
is essentially, we were talking about 1984 before. Yeah. It's kind of a very Orwellian thing that exists.
And I know that that has happened to people. I do know people who have, you know, been quote unquote canceled. Number one, what's interesting is usually long term they end up massively thriving as a result of it. They go through, you know, a crappy period.
It's the resilience. It hones you to become more.
And then they come out and they break through and they, oh, now they're more free and now they're at liberty to speak and so on. And they're a bit more anti-fragile and cancel-proof.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, you know, like most things, people tend to, we tend to think of worst case situations that are extraordinarily unlikely. Any young man who has ever... What's something that's really scary to a young man approaching a woman they're attracted to? Okay, because in their brain, like logically speaking, it's pretty stupid to be afraid of approaching a woman.
Yeah.
It's pretty dumb. Like it's not like a really logical, like, bro, you're like, you know, you got 50 pounds on here. You're like 5 inches taller.
Yeah.
There's no, like what? You know, and in the brain, it's like, oh my, you know, the heart race is like, well, you know what? Maybe they imagine, oh, she's going to like slap him and like throw something on him, or maybe some like her, I don't know, her buff boyfriend's going to come out and like beat you up. Right? Like there's something in your brain. It's like probability wise, if you made like a reasonable, I'm not saying, you know, you go and grab her or something, but like probability wise, the worst thing that's going to happen is like probably you get ignored, or or she says she has a boyfriend, or she politely declines, right? But it's like the thing in the brain, and I find that happens with people speaking out as well. They're saying, oh, if I say this thing, like I'll get fired and I'll lose my job. I'm like, dude, the probability of, you know, you of all of this stuff happening is, it's so extraordinarily low. And the point I also make, and look, I mean, I've been self-employed for a long time, so I you know, I can understand people's fears. But I've had conversations with people where, you know, they feel so, so locked in and stifled and afraid of being canceled and so on, where I've had conversations with guys where I'm just kind of like, dude, I've had conversations where I'm like, if you are working at a place or for an employer that would fire you for saying like what you're telling me you want to say.
Like only men can get pregnant, like, or cannot get pregnant.
Yeah, I'm like, do you, is this who you'd want to work for a long time? Like, do you want to dedicate decades of your life to an employer who would cancel you and fire you for saying a basic truth? I'm not saying like putting out some radical viewpoint.
It comes back to most men don't have standards even for themselves. Yeah. And so it's like courage, there's like tiers of courage, right? Like we think the word courage only means like, oh, a soldier in combat, you know, being brave under fire or whatever. It's like, dude, that's like 1% of, not even, it's probably less than that.
Yeah.
That's like, because even in the military, right? Like I deployed to combat, like I didn't do anything that crazy.
Sure.
Like there was no like courage under fire moment or whatever, right? Like even within Normandy. People who go to war, there's a very small group of people who actually do like really courageous things under fire. Okay, so like, but most guys, it's romanticized. So we like think that's the only litmus for courage. I think it's more courageous today, to your point, to be like, no, this company does not align with my values. I'm out.
Yes.
I'm going to go find a different job. That takes a lot of courage, because in the world we've grown up in, there's a lot of risk for that kind of thing. But this is where I really, really hone in on being a man of standards, personal standards, personal values. You know, not everyone I work with is Christian, and that's by design, because, you know, this is a man problem. You know, and obviously my faith inspires that, but it's not exclusive to like just Christian men. We need all men to just act like men again in our culture, you know, and whatever your faith system is, you know, I'm not going to try and like preach to you about that, but your inability to just hold a simple line for yourself that spirals back into the mental health stuff. Yeah. And like, oh, you don't respect yourself now. So you just spiral down and you just keep going down, 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 down. And then you're that guy showing up to your wife all depressed and sad. And so do you think she's attracted to you? Do you think she's excited to be your wife? No, because you're not Prince Charming anymore. You're depressed and sad and hate your job and all this kind of stuff. Like, you have to take ownership of it. You have to shake things up, and there's risk with that. But that's, I try to give those tools to men to like, literally my goal is like, you're going to do my program and leave. And like, I hope that you get so successful that you're like, see you later, George, never need you again. Yeah. Great. Mission accomplished. Like, go forth and multiply, you know, like execute. And that, I think it's a, there's a very loud minority that has convinced men that there is more risk than there actually is. Cause like, I'll have people message me as unknown as I am, being like, how are you so courageous to like say these things? And I'm like, what are they going to do to me? Yeah. What are they actually going to do to me? Get mad at me on Twitter or X? You know, like, that's fine. Yeah. Go ahead. You can say whatever you want to me. Yeah. If me saying the thing saves one dude, then I don't care. I'll take every insult under the sun to like help that guy, you know? And more guys need to do that, and you don't have to do it in some big overt way like you and I are trying to do, right? Like, you can do it behind the scenes, but you just stop following along, you know? For most men to start leading, you just have to stop following first. That's really the first piece. I empathize a lot with guys in that position, though.
I do. You know, I think, I think faith does play a very significant role in here as well, or at least it should. Firstly, I think that a lot of Christians particularly forget that cowardice is a sin.
Yeah, I have a, we could do a whole second episode on like Christian men, because if you look at examples of men in the Bible, they weren't gentle people.
Bro, look at what's our religion called again? Christ.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think you made a pretty big
sacrifice. You want to look at the four pillars?
Yeah.
There's a great example.
Yeah.
Jesus wasn't always just nice. And even when he was being polite, he still said, go and sin no more.
Yeah.
But to the willfully evil people, he rebuked them aggressively.
Yes.
Right, to the Pharisees and stuff. So he wasn't just this like meek, gentle person.
No.
And modern American Christianity has loved to paint him like this little lamb. No, he's the Lion of Judah.
Yes.
And when he returns, he's coming with a sword.
Yep.
So, you know, Christian men is a big problem in my book. And I was part of the problem because it's the way we were raised, and but you got to wake up.
Yes.
Like, so I'm hoping someone will listen to this and be like, oh, okay, maybe I should ask some questions here.
There's that. But I think we have the advantage in that, you know, you're not doing it by yourself. You're not doing it by yourself.
Absolutely not.
So I genuinely believe that the reason why a lot of things pan out the way they do for people, or they just don't work and permanently struggle with certain things, is because they are, regardless of their belief, like they're trying to do it completely by themselves. And as a Christian, I don't believe you can do everything by yourself. Like,
you're designed to do it with others.
Yes, we are sinful by nature. We make mistakes. We do stupid things. We make bad decisions. The most devout person out there, you could be in a monastery, and you still sin, you still make mistakes, you still feel temptation, you still have all of these things, right? Because you're a human being. And so I think when there's the approach of just like, I'm trying this thing and I'm failing, and I'm trying and I'm failing, it's typical, because there are many ways of dealing with things, but and we can do a lot by ourselves, but ultimately in the grand scheme of things long term, we're pretty pathetic on our own, if we're just left to our human ways and trying to do everything our human way, then there's always just going to be that cap. There's going to be that limitation. And there's going to be a cap. There's going to be a limitation on courage as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Because why wouldn't there be? I mean, we're honed for survival.
Yeah.
I'm not confused as to why people don't speak out more, or to why certain things get to a certain way. It's like, I'm not confused by cowardice, because that is the default position.
Mm-hmm.
As an animal, most animals are wired for, you're wired for survival.
Yeah.
Right? Is a gazelle a coward if it, you know, hints, ooh, there's a lion there, right? I'm going to run. It's like, no, that's just survival. It's not really,
correct.
It's not cowardice per se. Courage is the abnormal thing, because it doesn't mean you don't have fear. It means you acknowledge, okay, I am afraid of this thing. There is some fear. There is a potential downside or consequence, but it's the right thing to do. so I'm going to do it anyway. And there's levels to that. Are there certain risks that I wouldn't want to take? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would like to think that if
there's still wisdom.
Yes, there's exactly.
It's wisdom with courage. It's like you pick your battles, of course. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's a great distinction there.
Yeah. But so in terms of your how many men have you coached now?
What do you say? Do you know? So I don't when's this coming out? that'll change the number.
Let's be a
while down the road. Probably by the time this comes out, close to around like 40 total that I've personally worked with.
So we can say a few dozen.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, my cycle is we do a class once a quarter.
Okay.
And my goal is 20 men per class.
Got
so
it.
That'll be 80 men a year is
so
my...
So something you started quite recently?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So as of this recording, we're launching class number one just a few days after this. I've done kind of like a test group and I had some one-on-one clients and stuff, but we're rolling it into doing more of a cohort to mimic... Because I think men need to be in the trenches together,
working together.
And that's a huge component of what I teach. It's not just raw leadership training. It's like authentic masculinity training and exactly what you were just talking about. You can't do it alone, brother. Mm. You're going to get a battle buddy. Yep. You're going to be responsible for each other. If one of you isn't at the call and you can't tell me where your battle buddy is and why he's not at the call, you're responsible too. Mm. And you're going to go through these things together. And this is like what the military gets right, is forcing men to work together. But we stop at a very superficial level. And so we're taking it to the nth degree of like, okay, you're going to ask him, are you struggling with porn? Or how is your marriage? Or like, it's real brotherhood in action. Yeah. And that's, you know, for me, the most rewarding piece of this experience is seeing the guys work together without me having to like prompt them to do it. And then they come to the calls and like, yeah, we called each other up this week. We helped with this, some help with that. I'm like, perfect. Like the goal is for me to not need to exist.
Yes.
My long-term vision is if I could be so successful with this that we just heal men in general, that I don't need to have a coaching program for men anymore. That would be mission accomplishment. So, you know, as a guy who struggled immensely himself, and I see the damage that it caused, like my, I really do believe it's my calling to use my giftings for this purpose specifically.
Yes.
And so to all the critics, that's why I don't care. Whatever anyone says, I don't care, because I know at the end of the day, the way that these men's lives are changing, and by extension, all the people that rely on them are changing for the better. It's worth all of it. And yeah, so it's exciting. It's fun to see it play out in action.
Yep.
And I just, you know, I wish there was more of me to make it more widespread.
Dude, man, well, I think you're doing the Lord's work. I think that it should be the mission of every man out there to use the combination of their talents, their knowledge, their experience, their background, their personality, which is unique for every single human being. No person has the exact same combo of those as anybody else, to use that to help other people and society. That's been my mission pretty much for the past 20 years. It was just, okay, I have a unique combination of background, personality, experiences, talents, and so on. No one else has that exact combo I do.
Right.
So how can I use this as a force for good in the world to positively inspire, motivate, help, for lack of a, you know, just however way, as many people as I can. It's why I became a musician to begin with,
because
I was like, all right, I've got this ability, so I got to do something with it, and I'm not going to use it to promote death and destruction and degeneracy. I can use it to uplift and motivate people, and then through my podcast, through my writing, through my public speaking, through my coaching, all the things that I do, it's all the same thing in different mediums.
Yeah.
And I think that everybody should be doing that. Not everyone is a wonderful communicator, but there's people who are great at physically building things.
Correct.
There are people who are wonderful entrepreneurs. There's people who have all sorts of unique skills and talents. It could be playing trumpet. It could be doing surgery. Whatever it is, if you can use that to help other people, then number one, I mean, people want some meaning and purpose permanently. That's a great way to get it. And also, ironically, it's also how you really become successful.
Yeah.
The more people that you can help.
Yep.
And that's a big bucket. Help is a big bucket. The more people that you can help by giving them something they want or need, helping them along in some way, that's actually what even is a business. I mean, any decent business that's ethical, that's really what they do.
Correct.
They create products and services that people...
It solves a problem.
Need or want. Yep. Solves a problem. And so a lot of people ask the question, how do I make more money? If you actually think, wait, reverse that and think, how can I help more people?
How can I add more value?
How can I add more value? Yeah. Then that tends to be a byproduct of it.
I agree. And that, I'll just make that final point on, like, you know, I talked a lot about like leadership and masculine leadership. That's irrelevant to your title.
Yes.
You could be the lowest guy in an organization in terms of rank and have the best idea. And you do what's called bottom-up refinement. And this is what men need to own. It's on us to like do this everywhere we go. Like, hey, you know what? This actually isn't working well. Why don't we try this instead? And everyone goes, oh yeah, great. Like, people are desperate for someone to step up and fix things everywhere they go. Mm-hmm. We want to pretend like we're not. But like the second someone steps up in like a crisis situation, everyone's like, oh, thank God, Jimmy saved us. You know, like everyone wants that. So you can be that without the title, right? And to your point too, your giftings, your skills, all of that, the four pillars and stuff, if you do those regardless of who you are and what your skill sets are and what your, you know, station in life is, you will be better at it and you will make a bigger human impact on people. And they will start to look at you differently and be like, man, that guy really, like, I don't know what it is, but he's just different. You know, he cares for people. He like makes things happen in a different way. Like, I want to learn more about him. I want to be like that guy. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. And my mentor says all the time, is like, you want to increase your revenue, increase your human potential, like increase other people's human potential, your human value.
I'll tell you what else is really cool about this as well, is when you start doing this, you will draw and attract like a magnet other people who are doing the same thing in different fields and sectors, regardless of geography.
Yes.
Especially with the internet now.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's like in my own journey too, starting on this path and everything. Like, it wasn't until I started down the path and started putting in the work and like taking the risk that mentors like appeared to me, and brothers, and like these people now that are like, they're so pivotal in my life. Like, I rely on these people immensely. I didn't know them a year ago.
Yep.
It's because when you start to live these things out for real, to your point, you will attract the right type of people. That's how you'll build a real brotherhood for yourself. And you don't have to be famous. You don't have to get on the internet. You don't have to be, you know, a culture warrior. You can stay a silent, quiet life and make an impact in your little circle. And that matters. That will matter over time. Like, that's a real legacy. Because like all the people that positively changed their lives, they don't need to remember your name, but the impact that you made, that's worth it. Like, your life meant something then, right? And as men, that is definitely something we want and are inherently designed to try and do with the time we have on this earth, is to make a difference in some way. So it should start with your family, and then once that is, you know, you've done that well, you can then go more outward.
Amen. George, where can people find and follow you online?
Yeah, so the website is theelitesentinel.com. I'm on X. That's the best place to reach me, is Elite Sentinel X. And I post there a lot on X about like these kinds of things that we've talked about. And if you're a man looking to join my program, probably go to the website and join the email list, and we'll get you plugged in.
Awesome, man. George, thanks for the time.
Yeah, brother. Thank you so much.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.